And now I have the pleasure of bringing on Kwame Onku. He is the chairman and CEO of Black Star Fund. How you doing, Kwame?
I'm phenomenal. Good morning. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. You have been on the show before, but let's get an update on your entrepreneurial journey, right? You're launching a new fund.
I am. It's called the Black Star Fund, brand new fund, a micro VC fund. And we're going to be investing in entrepreneurs, innovators, mostly in the U.S., but we're also going to be doing a little bit of investment in Africa as well.
Oh, love it. Okay, so what is a micro VC investment fund?
Well, you know, it's all relative. When you're in the Bay Area, a small venture capital firm is about $50 million, okay. Right? That's a small one down in the Bay Area. Up here in Sacramento, we say a micro VC fund. That's like about $3.5 million.
Okay.
Yeah, so this will be my first fund that I'm the sole general partner of. And running. So we wanted to start it small, get a good track record, and then be able to build subsequent larger funds after that.
So what prompted you to start this fund? Because you've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, you know, I love this space. I love the space of pouring into entrepreneurs, helping them to get the seed capital. I like the idea, you know, we were together last night at the Capitalize event with the Sacramento Kings, and to see those entrepreneurs and the opportunity to not only invest in them with capital, but with resources, relationships, and expertise. You know, I'm 47, and, you know, I've been around for a while. So I've seen a lot, I know a lot of people, and I can add value to those companies because of who I know and what I know to help them to make their journey smoother, easier, and to attain success quicker.
Yeah, I have this fascination that if enough of the Kwame Onkus of the world help enough of the best of the best and the up-and-comer entrepreneurs, we can create an entrepreneurial revolution. And I think, you know, you see that right down the street in the Bay Area. It's happening. You're saying your focus is in the U.S. and in Africa, though. So how much impact will this have on Sacramento?
Yeah, so that's a great, great question. You know, I'm a firm believer that wherever you're rooted, that's where the fruit of the labor manifests itself. And so being here in Sacramento, my ability to not only create the fund and run the fund, but that the epicenter of all the work is here. So our tentacles can reach out to the Bay Area. They can reach all the way to West Africa. But we're here at the root. And so we're leveraging the relationships with the city and with the state and with the partnerships that we have right here in my hometown. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's great because if you think about it, the Bay Area has got its claim to fame in terms of Silicon Valley, not because it keeps all the money in Silicon Valley, but that's just where the root is of. They're investing in companies all over the world.
Yes.
And it brings that capital and that growth back to the Bay Area. So that's really the vision that I have here, not only to be, you know, a venture capitalist in terms of my own success of the fund that we're building, but to work with the other funds locally so that we can be investing together to help to grow the region.
Yeah. Well, how do you decide who you're going to invest in, where to invest the money?
Sure. So it's interesting because I think most investors have different ways that they analyze deals, right? Some people are very analytical and they want to look at the spreadsheets and they want to look at the numbers and that kind of thing. And I think that's great. I liken myself to an old school A&R person from a record company.
Okay.
The person that goes to find the talent. They can sit in a club, they can sit in a church, they can hear somebody sing, and they know that they have the it factor. And I think that's the gift that I have, and I've always had that ability to just spot the talent. And so that's what I look for. Now, when we peel it away, I'm also looking for a team leader. And how I judge a team leader is not by how they represent themselves, but how their team relates to them.
So that's interesting.
Yeah, I'll give an example. You know, there's a company that we invested in. It's a sports tech company. And when I was first looking at that deal, I found that the chief marketing officer had left a six-figure job, took a 70% pay cut to work with the founder, and they'd worked together for 8 years and were very, very close. That told me a lot. So when I saw people leaving very lucrative jobs and taking significant pay cuts to work with this guy, and I saw the way that they listened to him when he spoke and the excitement and enthusiasm they had about the vision of the company when he wasn't around, that spoke volumes about him as a leader. So that told me about the culture that he created. And it says a lot, you know, I don't think we give enough weight to the power of emotional intelligence in leadership, right? So when we talk about emotional intelligence, it's that ability to connect with people, to know what's going on, to know what buttons they need to motivate them and to keep them, you know, charged up. And because, you know, being an entrepreneur is tough. Mm-hmm. It's a tough journey. It's a brutal game. So maybe you're tough. Maybe I'm tough. But can your team manage the storms that are inevitable? And so when you see folks that have the emotional intelligence to get a sense of what their team needs and that the team knows what their leader needs and they're all working together, that is very important to me. Because at the end of the day, look, you can have a great idea, you can have a great product, there could be a great market fit. But what I've found is that most startup companies die by suicide, not homicide, meaning that the failures come from an inability for a team to work together, for personal issues to get in the way. So it's rare that you see for a startup company to be decimated by external market forces. It's the internal stuff. So the question is, can this team work together? Can they coalesce together? Can they weather the storms together? And you can see that early on just within the chemistry of the people. Then you go into stuff around the business. Obviously, is are they meeting a real need in the marketplace? Is it innovative? Are they doing something that nobody else is doing? You know, all of those things come into play. But what I know is that when you've got the right people at the helm, they'll figure it out.
Yeah. Okay, walk me through this process. And I am in total agreement. As an investor, I'm always looking for the rock star entrepreneur, somebody who can really make the molecules move. And sometimes I have that that sense within the first 10 minutes of meeting them. But learning these stories, right, to learn how they work together, to understand the entire process of, or excuse me, the background for their leadership. How in depth is that, I guess, investigation?
Sure. I guess it's relative, right? I mean, let's go back a little bit to figuring out who we're dealing with. You know, one of the things I try to get away from is doing presentations like in a kind of a corporate boardroom environment. It's staid, it's kind of cold. I don't really know who this person is. Maybe we'll start there, right? But in terms of my due diligence of getting to know you, I want to hang out with you.
Okay.
Right? I want to go to a restaurant. I want to go to a coffee shop. I want to go to where you hang out.
Yeah.
I want to, because when you walk into a place, especially if you go visit somebody on site and you see the way that the people interact with them when they walk in, that says a lot, right?
True.
So those are the things that we're looking for in terms of the person. You know, the level of in-depth also deals with, I'm in the innovation space. So, for example, if I'm dealing with a virtual reality company or an entertainment company, I actually have an extensive background in the entertainment industry. So not only do I understand that pretty well, I want to get more in-depth so I can understand their technology because I understand it. I also have a large network of people I can run the deal by, right? If it's an arena I don't know much about, but I'm very intrigued by the founder. I'll give you an example. I just been working with a founder that's in the medtech space. I don't have a whole lot of background in the medtech space. But this particular founder and his team has created a very smart solution to help manage the cost waste in hospitals, right? I've got great relationships in that network, in my network, to help him to grow. So my diligence in terms of all of the technology, it's not that extensive there. I can run that by other people.
Do you try to be the lead investor? Do you try to get in early on? Or are you looking for companies that are a little bit later stage? Maybe they've already got some seed money.
So this is a great question. So for this fund, most of the fund will be dedicated to following other investors.
Okay.
And the reason why is because my investors now, I want to be able to mitigate the risk for them. I don't want to be doing wild, wild west investments. Well, Kwame, why'd you choose this company and nobody else invested in them? It makes it easier to say, hey, I'm joining a group. There's four other investors already involved. The other reason I like that model is it means that it's not just a shared capital risk, but it's a shared resource that we can work together. What I mean by that is most investment groups don't just write checks and wait to see what happens. They write checks and they leverage their relationships and their expertise. So if I can join the group with four or five other investment groups, their resources, their networks, their expertise, and we're working together to help that company be successful, the likelihood of success is much better. That's the first part. The second part is that with the first fund, I want to get the exit sooner. So by investing in a company that's a little bit more evolved and developed, I'm now jumping over 2-3 years of them going through the headaches and trying to figure things out.
True. So there's a lot of people that aren't super familiar with venture capital firms and the need to exit. Walk us through what that's like. How long do you typically hold an investment? Is that 5 years, 10 years? What's it look like?
Sure. So I'm new to the game. Most, you know, seasoned VC that's been in the game, maybe 7 or 10 years, they can walk you through, hey, I've invested in 55 companies. I've had X amount of exits. I'm literally on year three. So I'm new at the game. I have a portfolio now, about 5 companies that we've invested in. This next fund, fortunately, I've already vetted the company. So we'll probably have 15 to 20 within the next couple months.
Wow.
So we'll jump pretty significantly. But and for the listeners wondering, with this venture capital game, what does this all mean?
Yeah.
You know, typically you're looking for a 7 to 10 year time horizon from the time that the initial early stage money is put into a company. If in fact it's, let's say it's a Facebook or a Google that does an IPO with some significant multi-billion dollar exit, it, you know, it's hard to believe, but most of these companies, whether it was Hewlett Packard or Uber or Google or Facebook, they started with 3, 4, 5 people and a few thousand dollars. And ultimately did IPOs. I mean, when Facebook did its IPO, its valuation that day was over $100 billion, started out of a dorm room.
So, and then it dropped hard the next day. I was in on the IPO of that thing, and it dropped hard, and I was like, oh, no. Now, luckily, it's bounced up there pretty well.
About 6 times with the initial price, though. It did well.
Interesting. Okay, so again, we're kind of breaking this down for people that maybe aren't as familiar with venture capital. So investors, they come in, you launch this fund, you go out and get investors to put money in, and then when do they get their money back out? How does that work?
Sure. Well, I like this model. Let me tell you what the challenge is, and let me tell you what the reward is. The challenge is it's very high risk. Right. If we were investing in a real estate deal with a real estate developer who had been in the business for 20 years, had done this process successfully several times, and they own the land, that's a pretty low risk venture. Here we're telling you, hey, we've got a group of guys that has a technology idea, and there, you know, it's 4 or 5 of them, and it's a small company, and they have got no revenue, and they've got no customers, and we're going to invest $300,000. That's as risky as
of your retirement money.
Of your retirement, right? That's a very risky proposition. But what you're also talking about is imagine getting into Facebook with, for example, one of the guys I went to school with, Peter Thiel. He went to Stanford, and he was the first angel investor in Facebook, which means he wrote a check for $500,000. That check today is worth $3 billion, and he's still on the board of Facebook. So the potential return reward is pretty extraordinary in the venture game, but it's a classic duality in business. You know, the higher the risk, the higher the potential return.
Right.
So that's really what it is. So a venture capitalist investor, they basically, what we're doing is we're investing that money, diversifying it over a portfolio, let's say 15, 20 companies. And then in time, those companies increase in value and they get sold, or they have an IPO. So I'll give you an example. One of the companies we invested in my prior fund, we invested in that company and it was valued at $1 million. And so we own 10% of that company. Last year, only a year and a half after we did the deal, there was an acquisition offer for that company for $11 million.
Nice. Now, did you take it?
It was up to the founder. So the founder, we were very supportive of him. The founder, because he's a young guy, he was 31, a new dad, and he literally could have walked away with a check for $7 million. Mm-hmm. He felt so strongly that he was at the beginning of this entrepreneurial journey with this company, that he turned down that offer. And those of us who invested in, who are on the board, we supported that because we believe with him that it can make it. So let's just say hypothetically, that company sold for $80-100 million. That's amazing to have 10% of that company for $100,000.
You bet.
Right? So now again, there's no guarantee that one, that that's going to happen. And two, there's no guarantee that the portfolio will turn those kind of returns. But what it means is that when you're coming in early with $100,000 or $50,000 and sometimes $25,000, you could own 10%, a quarter of a company that could increase in extraordinary value in a short amount of time.
It's incredible returns. I had sometimes you see it almost like an acqui-hire. I invested into one early, no revenue, and they really loved the team, and they paid 10 times type thing, and they took the money versus continuing to roll the dice. So I'm thinking to myself. So who should invest into something like this? These are just accredited investors, right?
Yeah. So let's take a look at that quickly. So when we say accredited investors, right, we're talking about folks that the government has deemed that these are folks who are making at least $200,000 a year as an individual, $300,000 a year as a married couple for the last 2 years, or have a net worth of at least $1 million.
Okay.
What's interesting is some legislation was passed just a few years back that allows non-accredited investors to participate in what's called equity crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about just like a Kickstarter campaign, but there's new platforms that have been designed that allow folks to participate in equity crowdfunding like a Kickstarter campaign without being an accredited investor. So I've recently done a partnership with my fund and a great platform called Republic. And Republic is an equity crowdfunding platform that allows people to invest literally as little as $100 to $250, but to participate in these early growth innovation companies.
Sort of democratizes the whole process where anybody can get in, you know, instead of just for the people who have already had some success, it allows the people sort of on the way up to throw in a small amount of money.
You're literally using their tagline. That's exactly their mission, to democratize that process.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about success. We, you know, you talked about a potential $100 million exit, could be a $10 million exit. But success looks different to everybody. So now we're talking about in the investment community. But let's talk about you, Kwame Onku, the family man, the businessman, the a man that has so many things going on. What's success look like to you in these different areas?
Sure. I think it means different things to me. And I love that you asked me that question, right? Because I see success for me being in just a different arena. So I'll give you an example. In this game, part of my success is for myself. I want to show myself that I could do what I set out to do. You know, I went to school with the folks that created Yahoo, Google, YouTube, PayPal, LinkedIn, you name it. And these guys, I say this respectfully, I don't think they were any smarter than I was. But they were just in the, I think of it again like a seed. They were planted in the right soil, and in a soil that I just didn't really understood existed.
Yeah.
So now, being a little bit further down in the life journey, I want to be able to play in that game and win in that game. Mm-hmm. Yes, we can aggregate investment dollars. Yes, we can identify talent. Yes, we can place that money and help those companies to get customers and to increase in value and ultimately get a higher return than what we put in. So that's what probably
well,
the first areas.
How do you know, we'll stay on this business side, proving it to yourself.
Yeah.
What do you have to prove to yourself? What level of success, what does that success look like in terms of, you know, help us imagine that?
Well, look, I'll be honest with you. And this might sound strange, but it is what it is. For me, if I got a 2x return on this first fund, I would be jumping up and down. Because to me, you're just returning value. And I can't imagine anybody in the world that said, hey, if I put $100,000 into anything and got that back 2x in a relatively short amount of time, that's an extraordinary accomplishment. So to me, it proves, one, I can do it.
Yes.
And two, that the model works. When you think about Silicon Valley and 100x and 1,000x and Uber and the rest of this craziness, you know, all of that stuff could happen. But to me, the success is that it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Did it return the capital to the investors and increase in value? Because if you can show even a 1.x return, that means you're doing something right. Now, when you look at most investment funds, right, they're not doing 2x returns, right,
mm-hmm.
for anybody, right? So if you're getting 10% every year on your money, you are a happy, happy camper.
Yes.
So for us, it's relative to like private equity. 2x is pretty much off the charts. Relative to potential venture capital where you get 50x returns, it seems small. But the reality is if you can prove the model works, then you can continue to build and to grow on that.
Yeah.
And that's what success is about.
Well, what about the complete entrepreneur here? You think about you know, your success. You've done this. You're a family man as well. What's success look like? Some of us, I guess, wrestle with the challenge of work-life balance. But there's these windows of time where, okay, I'm starting something. That work-life balance doesn't exist quite like I maybe thought it might. And so you have to kind of go all in. But you still want to have a successful life beyond beyond business.
That's right. So I feel very fortunate and very blessed that as of today, I have a certain life rhythm and design that just inherently gives me the balance. And what I mean by that is that I might work 70, 80 hours a week, but sometimes I just wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning just because I'm up,
mm-hmm.
and I'll send emails and I'll read. I literally drop my son off at school every day.
Yeah. I know you've taken him to work with you a time or two as well. You're like father of the year, bringing your son to pitch contests. He's becoming, does he have his MBA yet?
You know, he doesn't, but I'll tell you, he's right on track. His favorite show is Shark Tank. He's right on track. But yeah, that's the thing is that I'm at all of his games. I get to relax. I get to spend time with people that I care about. And so it works. I think that where the stress of being an entrepreneur, and even though we're on the fun side, we experience life as an entrepreneur the same way because we're an early stage startup. We're raising capital. We've got all kinds of pressures and demands, time pressures and demands and investor demands, and the pressure, as I shared with you, in terms of success that we put on ourselves. But I'll be honest with you, the older that I get, the less that I need, and I don't mean that necessarily from a material standpoint, but what I mean is that two nights ago, after dinner, I told my son, hey, let's go for a walk. And we went for this amazing 15-minute walk, just enjoying nature and just enjoying the new season that's coming in. And I just thought to myself, like, I have it all. I love what I do. I'm healthy. I'm with my son. I'm enjoying life. Right? So it's not always, you know, making millions of dollars and being on a yacht. I mean, that's mm-hmm. great. But in terms of as I've gotten older, the needs that I have and what means success to me has really changed.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had a friendship with Prince, the yes. rock star. And what can we learn from people who have this wildly successful lives, like someone like Prince? What can we learn from them?
Well, I think twofold. You know, there's a great book by Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich.
Mm-hmm.
And when he basically studies successful people over a certain amount of time, and he figures out all the traits. But the number one trait that he says that is necessary for anybody to be successful in any arena is drive. It's literally drive,
yeah.
right? It's not your degree. It's not your intelligence. It's not your IQ. It's just drive. When you look at people like Prince, that was, if there's one word that you could say encapsulated him, it was drive. Right. So what we can learn from Prince is what we can learn, quite frankly, from most successful people, which Napoleon Hill figured out a long time ago. That book's 100 years old, is just drive, that the energy to get up every day and go after and build that dream.
Yes. Interesting yeah. that you say that, because I think we're all born with, you know, we're kind of go, go, go. And then we're taught to sort of settle down, behave ourselves, and tapping into that drive, that pissed offness, or that thing that just you. I will win, period, end of story. How do we tap into that? How did Prince tap into that?
You know, it's interesting, man. And I struggle with this as a parent, right? Because as a parent, what you want to do is protect your kid. And the one thing you never want is for them to get hurt. But what you find is that we all attain success in life through adversity.
Mm-hmm.
It's through getting knocked on your behind. It's through bars being put in front of your face. It's through a bunch of people saying, no, you can't do that. You can't do that because of this, 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 and that. And then say, no, I'm going to prove you wrong, right? So what I find is a lot of the drive comes from adversity. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a direct proportionality between the more adversity you face,
yeah.
the more drive you have, which means the more successful you become.
I know. It's almost like it's not fair. I mean, it's right? like the advantage of right. or the advantage of being disadvantaged or something.
Yeah.
Interesting, because obviously you're tapping into some of that drive when you think back to Stanford and all these guys that hit it big. Obviously, there's some you're tapping into something there.
There's no question, man. So you experience it every level. Because some people say, well, you went to Stanford. You don't really know what struggle is. It's like, well, first of all, no one knows everybody's life. And we all have struggles, whether it's today or last year or from our childhood that we still struggle with, right? Everybody has all this stuff kind of in their life that drives them. You know, I think about my dad. You know, my dad was born in a country that was still colonized, and he grew up in a village with no running water, no electricity. And that young boy from Africa was able to create a successful medical practice, put a kid through Cal, through Stanford, and through Columbia, and now is a successful landowner in Ghana. So he had a drive, right? And we grew up watching that as children, that we knew where he came from, and we knew how hard he worked, and the challenges that we had. So we all have our pains, we all have our struggles, but I do think that's what drives you, and the more adversity you have, usually the more drive you have. So Prince was the same way. He had a really tough childhood. He basically left home when he was 13. He was short. He got made fun of all the time. You know, he had emphysema. He had all kinds of issues and challenges, but he had this gift of music. And he said, I'm gonna play 20 hours a day, and I'm gonna master this, and I'm gonna live out my dreams. And he absolutely did that. So he's a role model to me, because I got to work with them and see him close, you know, up close and personal. But I find I glean inspiration from a lot of folks, because it's that drive that really makes us successful.
Well, we definitely gleaned some insight today from you, Kwame. I want to thank you for what you're doing for our hometown, the entrepreneurs that we love, and appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thanks, man. I just want to say quickly that I want to thank you because you give so much. So many of us a platform to share. You know, you're such an inspiration to me as a leader, because you lead by example. And the reason I say that is because of this. You've attained incredible success, but you spend most of your time helping other people to achieve their dreams, right? And that's leading by example. So I just want to say, as a friend and as somebody who's in the community, that I appreciate what you've done for all of us, especially me, and the support as a dad and as a business leader. So thank you.
Thank you. Kwame Onku, Chairman, CEO, Black Star Fund. Appreciate you coming on. Thank you.